Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
Davey, you're not on the golf course today, but I think you're probably back at work. How are you getting on?
Not too bad, yeah. I had a nice day out in Carton House yesterday pretending to like play golf.
And can you not? I thought all naturally talented sports people were like automatically a 7 or a 10 handicapper.
No, unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. No, I can definitely not play golf, but I can pretend.
Very good. I thought, again, during lockdown, it was one of the things that a lot of people have returned to, you know, might have been a pitch and putt in your youth and decided, yeah, I'm going to try this now, because it looked like for a long time there wasn't going to be much else to do.
Yeah. Now, a lot of my mates now have gotten really into it heavily over lockdown, but not for me. Don't have the patience for it.
What did you do during lockdown?
A whole lot of nothing, I suppose. Just kind of chilled out. It was weird, kind of just had so much time on our hands. So yeah, a lot of relaxing, a lot of movies. That's about it.
The vast groping nothingness of no full-time GA to look into, the 31 hours a week that we keep hearing about. Was that like a terrifying glimpse of what life after retirement is going to be like? Or were you like, oh, actually, you know, I could do a little bit of this?
Yeah, no, it was nice initially, but I did enjoy it. But I have to say, when I went back training with the club, you know, you enjoyed that, being back in with the lads, like, you know, a little chat before training, you kind of realising how much you miss it.
The whole work-life balance thing is something that comes into sharp relief again and again, and we keep hearing a lot about it, particularly at the moment where you guys are training and playing a little bit of club football. What's it actually like? What is it like being an inter-county footballer? I mean, even last year before lockdown, how much time do you need to spend thinking and actually doing stuff to be prepared at inter-county level at the moment?
Yeah, it is a heavy time commitment, all right. You're always planning, you know, everything revolves around training because you're never missing that. And then if it's not training, you're planning your meals and nutrition, which takes a lot of time as well. So it is a little bit all consuming at times. So the whole lockdown thing was nice to just chill out, relax, not have to think about football at all. Yeah, it can be a bit much at times, but, like, you know, it's still a good crack at the end of the day.
Well, that's the thing. Like, a lot of times it gets sold to us as this kind of awful imposition that we're asking these young men to spend their time trying to become as good as they can possibly become. And the other side of that is you want to be as good as you can be. So it is a voluntary thing. You do kind of volunteer to be someone who spends time thinking about nutrition, who spends time thinking about a gym program, about your skills work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think most people who are playing into county would be very, very into, you know, self-improving and really into that healthy lifestyle. So like a lot of time when lockdown came in, I think a lot of lads ended up doing too much. They were out running almost every day or doing a little, you know, back garden workout where they could. So like, you know, I suppose you always find something to complain about. Like, you know, if it's not there, you're complaining that it's not there. And if it's there, you're like, oh, well, this is taking up too much time. But yeah, we can't complain too much.
Do you actually enjoy the training part of being an inter-county footballer?
Yeah, I love it. So one thing I say whenever people are asking, sometimes I get to come in and be like, oh, I enjoy training. I don't think you could do it if you didn't enjoy training. You'd be miserable, like, because you're doing it that often. The only thing I say that is the worst thing about it for me is I'm in the south side and we train over the north side. So rush hour traffic on the M50 every training is grim. That is like the one thing that would really get to me. But the actual training bit of it, really enjoy.
That's the other side of this. Everybody goes, the Dubs, they've got nowhere to travel. It's grand for them. It's like everybody lives in Dublin anyway. But actually, if you have been stuck in the M50 traffic in particular at, I don't know what time you guys, sometimes, are there evening training sessions?
Yeah, evening, yeah. So you're stuck in that rush hour evening. Now, listen, it's not as bad as if you're travelling back to Mayo or Kerry or whatever it might be if you're living in Dublin, but it can be still, if you're travelling from the south side to the north side in the M50 in rush hour traffic, it's not the nicest commute.
No, it's no fun at all. And then the other thing Paul Flynn said recently when he was talking about this, about trying to get the contact hours down to try and bring things back into some kind of level of normality to give people some sense of a balance between their private life, their professional life, whether in their actual careers, and then their sporting life, that he felt like the Dubs actually did a little bit less training while he was there under Jim Gavin. Was that your sense as well from talking to other players in different counties, that you somehow along the way cracked a bit of a code to make it that you were free to go off and pursue a career, you also were free at certain times of the year to go off and have a bit of a life, and that maybe you weren't doing the same level of the number of sheer training sessions that everybody else was doing?
Yeah, I don't know. It's always hearsay. It's like, this team's doing this and that team's doing that. But like, I suppose for us, we would be fairly good for respecting that other people, you know, everyone has commitments going on in their life, be it work, personal, and you need to get that right before, you know, you get on the field right. So they would have respected that as well, you know, especially coming up to exams. Jim would be, or would have been very pro of like, you know, telling lads, you know, you don't need to turn up to this training if, you know, you're right in the middle of exams. It doesn't make sense. You got to prioritise that at the moment. So, it's a little bit of balance. And, like, there's no point to overtraining or, you know, you're training so much that you can't do anything else outside of it and you're unhappy because of that. So then you're not going to end up playing well on the pitch. So I think we've been pretty well at finding the balance of it over the few years.
Jim always talked about having that balance, and he talked about the three glass balls, and if you let one of the balls drop, it's gonna shatter. And I thought, listening to him, it makes a whole heap of sense. It's easier if you're an established first team player and he's saying that and you're like, yeah, Grant, actually, I do have this very important family thing or something that I have to do. You were breaking into the team or trying to break into the team in a supremely competitive full back line. So when he's saying that, are you like, yeah, this exam, it is important, but I might actually get into the team if I make that training session?
Yeah. Like, they're decisions that are always going to be there. It can be a tough one if you're trying to break into the team and you're a new guy and you're trying to prove yourself. And it definitely weighs you. So you almost need, and at times I'd say management would be actively telling you here, don't come, you know, because I feel like when they leave it as a choice, it's like, oh, you can come or not come. You're probably going to end up going.
Yeah. So actually, and that would have happened to you at some point along the way where they're saying, look, you need to just.
No, I didn't have too many bad ones. The way it worked out for me, mostly with exams, they either fell just after the National League or before Christmas, before we had started football. So ended up being pretty good for me. I didn't have too many tough decisions, so it wasn't too bad.
So you were the captain of an All-Ireland minor winning team. And how soon after that did you end up getting called up to the senior squad?
So that was 2012. And then I remember getting a call around October time, so whatever, the All-Ireland final in September. And because it was the first year Jim was coming in, so he was starting the trial process kind of early to see what lads are like. It was actually Mick Deegan who gave me a call. I would have played with his son at minor, and I fully thought it was a prank at first because I was only 18. And I was like, this has to be a prank. I didn't say it, but I was like, I was very, very doubtful. And then as the call was going on, I was like, oh no, this is actually happening here. And then invited to a few trial games, and then ended up getting brought on from there. So yeah, straight from the minor panel into the senior panel.
Okay, so like that doesn't happen to that many people.
No, I suppose, yeah, it would be rare enough. I think because we had won, you know, we were successful and was probably lucky that Jim was also a new manager. So he's looking to bring in as much youth for the next few years. So that was probably his priority at the time, which looked out for us. So it was like myself, Cormac Costlow, Eric Lowndes, and Shane Carty out of that 94, that 2012 minor team, who would have went straight on to the senior team that year.
Niall Scully makes it eventually, is that right?
And then Niall Scully makes it eventually, and I think started ahead of me as well. I was on the panel for a few years before him, but then he would have been getting a lot more championship time than me.
Sickening.
So
again, that's a very interesting career path where a lot of people actually get the opportunity to go off, have a couple of years away from the pressure. And I don't know what you think now, looking back in retrospect, would you have preferred a couple of years of going off, fluting around, playing a bit of senior club football, and then coming into the senior setup? Or actually, was the right thing for you to do to stay very close to the guidance of Jim and the senior management team? Because it takes a while to go from being 18 and in the panel to actually being somebody who's winning a first team place.
Yeah. Listen, I think it stood me well at the end of the day, but at the time, I think it was 2, maybe 3 years of being on the panel and not really seeing any championship time. And that did start to wear at you a little bit, and you're seeing other lads who are on the team with you who wouldn't have got called up to the senior team, and you know they could be going over to the States to play a bit of ball, playing with their club, going on holidays over the summer as well. So missed out on a lot of that, which obviously wasn't great, but at the same time, from a development point of view, it probably did stand me well, so can't really complain.
And so training, you're obviously on the B team in training at that stage. Like, I don't know, is it A versus B in those matches? Is it as clearly defined as that?
Sometimes it is, sometimes it's mixed. I would have been, if it was ever, well, in the early doors, yeah, I would have been on the B team all the time. So you're learning loads because you're marking, you know, whatever the starting A forward is all the time. So it's definitely great way to bring you on, you know.
So you're marking Brogan or Connolly. That's not
Brogan bad. Would have been a regular matchup for me, so that was a good learning curve.
And how do they go? What happens? Are you allowed to punch them the way that every other defender in the country is allowed to, or is that kind of frowned upon?
Well, it depends how close to a match it is, I suppose. But I know they're always they're always very competitive, always very heated. But you know, we know I haven't had too many bad instances, but certainly the competitiveness is always there, and you know whenever the ball is there, you're going 100% at it.
Well, it has to be encouraged, right? Because otherwise, when are you going to get sharpened?
They're the best training sessions, an internal game that goes right down to the wire. Like they're the best. We want to prime and get ready to go for a championship game. It's the best way to do it.
So can we just go back a little bit? Because I would have spent a fair bit of time in Pat Coffey's company over the years, and he was like a proud father to all those minor teams that came through. He's part of Desi's backroom team. The thing that always impressed him most, and the thing that he would say to this day, is the character of the individuals, as opposed to the medals and competitions that you guys won. It was like, you know, you were all able to balance playing for the Dublin minor team and also successful academic careers, because again, from Desi's perspective, that seemed to be quite important early on as well. But on top of that, you obviously were doing a lot of physical work to be ready to go straight into the senior team as well. So what was that environment like from kind of 15 to 18?
Yeah, I was involved in the panel, or the minor panel, in 2011 as well. I initially didn't make it, and then there was like a trial game and I ended up getting called up in the first year. So I was trying to, that was kind of my first experience with Desi in 2011. And Pat Coffey as well. He's a lovely man. I haven't seen him in ages now, but it was good. Like the minor team would have probably been mirroring itself to the senior team. Like we would be playing kind of the same, you know, game. We would be roughly having the same tactics, a little bit of differences, but playing the same type of football, same style of football. And obviously you're getting good, you know, athletic coaching as well, priming yourself. So, you know, you're developing physically as best you can. So when it came to it and I was 18 going up to the senior panel, I probably wasn't too much of a reach because I'd been training at, you know, a relatively high level with the minors and doing the appropriate like gym work and all that as well.
And had you started that like at 15 yourself to get to the level where you're actually on the radar for the minor selectors?
When I was 15, yeah, I'd be practicing football and all, but there was been no gym work or athletic work really then. It was just all from a football perspective. I would have been on some of the development panels and that. And then come minor, when you hit kind of 17, was probably going into the gym and starting to lift and starting to see like the athletic side developing a bit more. And then I suppose it would have been in between my first year and second year minor, where I really would have tried to go at the gym a lot and, you know, get myself in as good shape as possible physically, you know.
And you end up being captain of that team that wins the All-Ireland.
Yeah, that was a good, because all the lads who would have been a year older than us, like you look at like Jack McCaffrey, Kieran Kilkenny, Paul Mannion, John Small, that year was actually hyped to be like the year that Dublin were going to win the All-Ireland. So, and I was involved in that team as well, but when we didn't win it that year, they were all saying, there's no way they're going to win it this year, not a chance. So we kind of had that attitude the whole time. We're trying to prove those people wrong the whole time. It was good. Yeah, it was a great year.
That was the Tipperary team that beat them, was it?
That was the Tipperary team, yeah.
That was not a bad minor team, and it turns out it was a pretty good tip team as well.
Yeah, they were a great team, to be fair.
So that was the most hyped team, but I think your team ends up being the most famous team because of your celebrity encounter with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, that was a good story to have. So random. Chances of it happening slim, but yeah, it's definitely probably the maddest story I think I'll ever have. I don't think I'm ever going to top it.
So what actually happened?
I think it was the Monday night. If we won the All-Ireland on Sunday, it was either Tuesday or Monday. And we were just out in town, lads bumped into him. And the way it worked out, we had said that we were going to go into town and head back to my house afterwards. So the lads were invited. I actually was already back in my house, and I get a phone call off one of the players saying, "Oh, we have Daniel Radcliffe. He's in a taxi with us. We're heading back to your house." And I was like hanging up and being like, "That's definitely not happening. I don't know what sort of lie they're going on with here, but like, it's definitely lies." And then opened the door and he's just there. So invited him in.
Hang on a second. You must have had a free gaff, right? If you're bringing the successful Dublin minor football team the night after they won the All-Ireland.
No, God love my parents. I didn't have a free gaff. They were just sound enough to say, "You know what? After putting in work the whole summer and you're kind of captain, so it should be your responsibility to, you know, keep the social side of it up as well." So my parents were actually in bed and I had to go up to them because obviously Daniel Radcliffe's in the house, not going to not wake my parents up. So I go to the bed and like, shake my man, being like, Mom, Harry Potter's downstairs, Daniel Radcliffe's downstairs. And she's looking up at me like, "What is my son telling me here? What like drugs is he after taking? He doesn't know what's going on." And then she comes down in her dressing gown and all, and my dad comes down as well, and like she's making him a cup of tea. My dad's doing magic tricks, trying to impress him with that. It was a surreal experience.
He seems like he's a good sport though, in fairness.
He was great fun, yeah, lovely guy.
And it turns out you're actually not a closet Harry Potter fan at all. You're like a completely out there, you're a proper, which house are you?
I don't know, you have to say Gryffindor, I feel, but like, the house is like, you can't be Slytherin, and the other ones are like, Hufflepuff is like kind of nothing, and then Ravenclaw, smart guys, so I'll stick with Gryffindor. But yeah, I was gassed when he was over, like I would be a big Harry Potter fan. So I was like, "Oh, Daniel, can you come in here for a second?" So I brought him into the front room and I had like my copy of the final book. And I was like, "Would you mind signing this for me?" So he signed that and all, which is kind of cool to have.
That's not bad. Is that more important to you than any of your All-Ireland medals? There's a fire in the house. God forbid there's a fire in the house and you can only have one thing in your hand. And you're like, there's the case with all the medals in it and there's the signed Harry Potter. You're like...
Harry Potter, yeah, definitely. No, obviously not. You'd have to go for the medals. But I'd have to think about it, probably for a bit too long.
Yeah, well, they can reprint those medals for you. You can just tell them they got melted down. You're not going to get that book again. Come here, I also saw somewhere that you were, frequently we ask, you know, which of your All-Irelands is your favourite one? And everybody's like, it's too hard to pick. It'd be like picking between your children. For you, it's not that hard, though, is it? It's the ones, you definitely count more the ones that you're on the field, yeah, that you start games in. They're more important to you.
Like it's obviously an All-Ireland where you're just involved in any sense is better than no All-Ireland. So being involved, especially when I was younger, you know, so young, even not playing was great. But it's a lot sweeter when you're on the pitch for that final whistle, you know, that's a euphoric moment. It's just amazing, yeah.
And look, I mean, you can't compare, but obviously it means more because you didn't just arrive in the panel, you didn't just break into it. You've seen the progression that you've made yourself and you've had to fight for every step of the way because, as I said, and I'm not sure everybody kind of fully appreciates, the fullback line that you're trying to break into is a fullback line that, like, is full of all-time greats in their own ways and they all have very different capabilities and you're like, well, I can do a little bit of that and I could also do that, and if you just give me a chance, I'll do that one too.
Yeah, like, you need to have that attitude because I suppose when you're coming in young, initially, you know, you're coming in against the guys who you would have been like your heroes that you're looking up to. But then you, as you kind of gain a bit of confidence, the more you're training, you're like, hang on a minute, I can do this. And, you know, you start to believe in yourself that, you know, you should be, you've earned the right to that jersey, you know. But we are like, we're very lucky. The competition is always absolutely fierce. So it keeps you on your toes.
Kicked a lovely point, obviously, in the All-Ireland final replay this year. What is your game? How do you describe yourself as a footballer?
How would I describe myself as a footballer? I wouldn't describe myself as a person that kicks scores in Ireland finals anyway, despite the fact that it happened. I'd be a defender first and foremost, probably more of a man marker than anything else. And then if anything comes other than that, it's just kind of a bit of, I don't know, just happens. It wouldn't be my goal. My goal going into every game would be more the defensive side of things, who am I marking, be a stopper more than anything else.
Isn't it the case, though, with you guys that, like, it's all well and good being a stopper, but if the decision is that we're going to press forward, then you kind of have to also be able to be willing to be on the end of a move like you were at that stage?
Yeah, yeah. It's probably something I'd say I've kind of gotten better at over the years, when you realise you kind of have to add to your game in whatever way it might be. It's no different than, I'd say, forwards or these days are trying to figure out how to be better defenders. You know, how do I, you know, slow the man down as good as possible? Defenders are trying to figure out, okay, how do I add to the attack in the best way? You're just trying to do anything to really get the management to think, oh, you know, Davey's adding to the team in this way and this way and this way, you know?
And who, I'm interested in like, that's essentially what do you do when you're in the attacking third, should essentially really be a forward coach's job. And yet, I suspect it's the defensive coaches who are telling you what to do when you get there. Or maybe it's not. Maybe who does coach you? Who do you look for advice from when, like, when I'm making these runs? When's the time to make these runs? When's the time to hold still? How do I create the space?
Yeah, you might get a different answer depending on who you ask. All right. I suppose it would always be, like, the forwards coach is probably a misleading term for it, because it's more of the attacking coach. So it's like, it would be his job when we have the ball, no matter if it's a goalkeeper or, you know, a fullback or a full forward. It's kind of the, we have a possession coach and how do we get a score versus we don't have the ball and how do we defend. So I suppose it is a little bit misleading saying forwards coach, because it's just more how do we, an attacking coach, should we say, and a defensive coach.
So it's a whole team. Because Stuart Lancaster, for example, he coaches both sides of the ball, and that's kind of unusual. And that's what Ron McGarr says, that he wants to get to, not to be one or the other. It's great to understand what a team is going to do when you don't have the ball. And it's great to understand what a team is going to do, but actually to have a full vision so that everybody can always be switched on is kind of unique, and it makes the team very difficult to defend against.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like, I mean, you got to be set up, like, defensively before you even lose the ball. You know, when you have the ball, you need to be, have some sort of shape, or, you know, be thinking what's going to happen.
Do you enjoy the art of defending?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd love it. Like, that'd be, like, I suppose my bread and butter, you know, really diving into the detail of trying to know your man as well as possible and predicting what he's going to do. And, you know, it's very, like, what small things can influence it a big way. So it'd be definitely what I would really enjoy in a game, like when you're trying to figure it out what you're going to do. And then if you execute that on the pitch, that'd be huge, you know?
Is that video analysis? Is that, like, reading written word or reports? Or how do you get that information?
Yeah, we're lucky, I suppose, when into county, it's kind of different. I was actually back in the club now, and, you know, chatting away to the full back line in the club and the cornerbacks, and I was just kind of thinking there, you know, it's kind of completely different at into county, because you have the tape that you can go back and look at. So, yeah, you're putting in the time of the tape. So ultimately, when you're marking someone, you feel like you've marked them before is kind of really the goal, you know?
Yeah, so you know that when he drops his shoulder, he's actually fainting, yeah. And he's not going to, yeah. And in those terms, has there been stuff that's been surprising when you've come up against teams in recent years? Like, do you still actually have to live through this so that the video is great and all, but actually when somebody is playing with full adrenaline and in a team that's playing well against you, they can do stuff that you haven't seen before?
Yeah, yeah, that can happen. Or they can just do the thing that you saw in the video and you were prepared for it and you just let it happen, because it's normally like a pretty good move, you know? What's that thing? It's like everyone has a game plan until you get hit in the face by Mike Tyson. Like you're going to plan as well as you can, but then when you get out there, it's a lot much different executing it. And then you have that other thing of they could just throw something completely different at you, you know? But yeah, all you can do is prepare, I suppose.
What's your recollection of the drawn game last year?
The drawn game? It was an intense one, yeah. Because it just, we were down a man so early, we were trying to scramble for a lot of the game, and we had that lead that we were just holding on to. And then the goal came, and then it was, oh no, we're in a bit of trouble here. But then we held our nerve and, you know, got the draw. So Yeah, it was a great one to be in. You know, they're the ones you want to play, the ones that go right down to the wire.
Are you conscious of it? Because it, like, the stadium felt like it was constantly inhaling and that there was no exhaling. There was like...
Yeah, it was a tense game. That'd be like my memory when I think back of it, is like, that was a tense one. Like, compared to even, I suppose, the final afterwards, the second game, the replay, the first one just had that tension to it all, constantly, I felt, yeah.
What's the aftermath of that like? Because John Giles always talks about feeling blues on the Sunday after a 3 o'clock kickoff. He'd feel quite blue. That night wouldn't sleep very well. And on Sunday, after a big tense game, he'd kind of be wondering, what's wrong with me? Why do I feel like this? And then it was like, because I played a massive game yesterday in front of thousands of people and it really had a big impact. So what's the aftermath of the drawn game like?
The drawn game feels like it's a very bizarre feeling because part of you is like, you know, you're just ready for the season to be over. Win or lose, you've put the work in all year. It's been building up to this one point, and you're thinking about, you know, you're thinking about football being done with, and then you have to get motivated again for another final. So it's a bizarre feeling. It would feel a lot closer to a loss than it would feel to a win. A win is right up at the top and a loss is right at the bottom. A draw is like only a little bit above a loss, I feel.
Physically, do you notice it more?
You're a bit drained, yeah. Like, I think it's like anything. You're just like, you're such a win or lose, regardless of the draw. Like, a big game like that, it's such an adrenaline rush. You're so, you know, hyped up for it. And then the aftermath of that is always going to be a little bit of, you're feeling a little bit sicky. My stomach actually sometimes, especially if it's a big game, if I had a little bit of nerves, like my stomach afterwards would be an absolute knot.
Right.
You'd notice it physically and mentally afterwards, definitely, yeah.
There was one specific bit from the drawn game that I distinctly remember. You guys are obviously down a man and you're pressing forward to try and get the ball back, and Cluxton comes out and pushes everybody forward and starts to mark a man himself. So all of a sudden, if somebody in the Kerry full back line or half back line looks up, there's actually no space. It was kind of a level of game intelligence that you don't see that often, and maybe you guys do it in training like 100 times, and so the rest of us don't actually get to see it. But in the All-Ireland final, with the game on the line, with the 5 in a row on the line, Cluxton's calm enough to go, "Oh, my job now is to go out here and just put up that shield."
Yeah, great game intelligence from Cluck out there. There was no like deep plan in that. It just ended up, I think, happening. Probably more so from us, the full back line, just like pressing and bombing forward, and then Plucko just seeing a Kerry man there, and he's like, "Right, well, I have to mark him because there's no one else there." I suppose it's a testament to his game intelligence and just reading the game, what's going on, what's the best thing to do. So yeah,
are you just picking his brain? Is that how that works? Is he telling stuff? Is there like how is the symbiotic nature of that relationship between the full back line and the goalkeeper?
He'd be a great leader. You know, he'd be even. From coming onto the panel at a very young age, he's really, really vocal in there to you. So he's always talking to us in there, keeping us on our toes. I suppose letting us know when we make mistakes as well, but in a good way. He'd be as vocal as possible. You know, he's a great leader out there on the pitch.
Now that you're getting to the stage of your career where you've been around the panel a long time and you've finally got your place nailed down, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it feels like you've got a place nailed down. You never feel like you have that until you're retired. But do you feel like there's more responsibility to be one of those vocal people and to be encouraging to other people on the panel, or is that just different people have different roles? Because obviously they marked you out as somebody who had leadership ability at minor level, and so they probably expect to see that again.
Yeah, I suppose. I think it's just different people lead in different ways. You know, some lads will be a leader, but it'll be more through their actions, what they're doing. Some lads are just vocal. I suppose my game would usually be to try to be as vocal as possible on the pitch. You know, you're always trying to chat to your teammate and just staying in tune, just little things to kind of keep things, you know, sharp and getting those 1% all over the place, you know.
All right. And last thing then, enjoying the balance now between playing club. Look, it was very widely debated and discussed. Whenever the club season finishes, you're still not going to be allowed to go back properly into county training until that specific date in September. Is that a bit of a pain?
Might be, yeah. We get knocked out early at club and I'm just sitting there doing nothing, thinking I should be training with the group. But, you know, I suppose it is what it is. You can't really complain these days because everyone's just trying to do the best they can with what's going on at the moment. So, yeah, it is what it is. I'm enjoying club training for the moment. Hopefully our championship goes on long enough that it's close enough. I think it's the 14th of September. Could be wrong now. But hopefully our championship season goes on long enough that I'm not waiting too long to go back into the county.
Well, listen, enjoy it. Great having you with us today, Davey. Cheers, man.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Mel.
That's Davey Byrne there. AIG Insurance, proud sponsor of the Golfing Union of Ireland, officially launching this year's AIG Cups and Shields and AIG Irish Close Championship at the GUI National Headquarters out in Carton House. Check out aig.ie/golfer. to see some new car and home insurance policies and online discounts available for GUI and ILGU members.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.